And welcome back. President Obama's Affordable Health Care Act may be the law of the land, but its future likely hangs in the balance of this year's election. While it has its supporters and critics, no one believes it's a completely perfect solution to national health care reform. Among them, Dr. David Ansell, Chief Medical Officer of Rush University Medical Center in Chicago. He's in town later this week at the invitation of the St. Louis chapter of Physicians for a National Health Program, and he joins us by phone from Chicago. Doctor, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I get the very strong impression that you don't feel the ACA goes far enough.
You know, it's a matter of the cup being half full or half empty, depending on your point of view. And this is my perspective on it. I've been a physician in Chicago for 35 years, and I've worked at three hospitals, but in two different worlds, and they're all on one street within a mile of each other. I spent 17 years at the public hospital, Cook County Hospital. And then 10 years at a safety net, urban safety net hospital, now as chief medical officer at Rush. And what I've experienced and my patients' experiences is a separate and unequal healthcare system that's driven almost exclusively by whether or not you have an insurance card and what type of card it is. And unfortunately, healthcare reform, the Affordable Care Act, with all its pluses, many good things in it, replicates this system that's going to perpetuate these inequalities. And it creates what I call a death gap. There's life expectancy gap between different populations, driven by many things, but one of the things that drives it is lack of adequate insurance. And some people, even though they have a card, face copays or doctors who will not take it, and then they find themselves closed off to care. And only a single-payer Medicare for all type of system where there's a one payer, one card gets everyone a ticket to admission to the best care possible, and there's choice. Only with that kind of system can we get equality in healthcare outcomes.
Is this the unfinished business that you speak of with regard to healthcare reform?
Yes, I think it's the unfinished business because what's happened, the triple aim of healthcare reform is one is to improve individual health. Number two is to improve population health, and three, reduce cost. And as long as you have systems that create separate care, depending on whether you have a card or not, or doesn't cover everyone, you're not going to achieve the first two aims of this, which is improve individual health or improve population health. We know, for example, a study that was done in Chicago, if you have Medicaid, and unfortunately, Medicaid has limitations as a program. In Medicaid, they did Chicago. They did a study. It was in the New England Journal of Medicine last year, where they took children and they secret shopped orthopedic surgeons' offices, and they said, "My child has a broken arm, and they have Blue Cross Blue Shield." And 94% of the time, the orthopedic surgeon office would take the patient. But if you said you had Medicaid, only 20% of the time would the orthopedic surgeon's office take the patient. And that's what's going to happen with healthcare reform is going to get a lot of Medicaid expansion. In a state of like Missouri, may not even expand Medicaid, and people are just shut out for the system. The cost, and at high cost to everybody, if you don't have a one-card system, an improved Medicare for all, where everybody has a set of defined benefits, that's theirs is part of broadly defined citizenship. We're never going to get to solving either the equality problem or the cost problem.
Well, it seems to me that the way you're describing it, part of the problem may be the physicians themselves, those who refuse to take those patients who need treatment.
Well, yeah, but if you understand it from the physician perspective or the institution perspective, you know, you can understand actually a perspective here. You know, in Chicago, one of the areas that I've studied is breast cancer disparity, and the mortality rate in the black community is 62% higher than that in the white community. It's actually a national phenomenon. I think if you'd look in St. Louis, you would have that same kind of mortality gap. In fact, there's a death gap between St. Louis City and St. Louis County of about 7.5 years. And that death gap is caused by many things is inequality in care delivery. And you look, when we looked at breast cancer, we saw these high mortality communities, and there were no hospitals in them and no clinics in them. Well, the reason there are no hospitals or clinics in them are economics. They could not economically survive. And we know from studies around the country that doctors who just take Medicaid have more difficulty accessing specialty care for their patients and other things. And so Medicaid is a terrible payer for both, many times for both hospitals and individuals. And without a single payer type system, a one card for everybody, will you get to keep people from cherry picking? Because you can't blame somebody in a way, except for on economic grounds, from saying I've got to support my family and this is how I need to do it. But if we had a fair payer system, no one would make those choices. And so I think we've put the burden on the doctors and the institutions when, in fact, it's a profoundly defunct system. So problematic that 26 other countries have turned to a solution, a single-payer type solution, that preserves the best of private health care, hospitals and physicians who can still work in the private world, but simplify the payment system.
Does the same hold true for Medicare, the same arguments and case that you make about Medicaid?
You know, if you ask, I'm not old enough for Medicare, but my parents are, most people on Medicare, if you do surveys of it, find it to be an imperfect but a better system, and people have access to care. Most doctors in this country still take Medicare. Increasingly, people can opt out. And that's the other thing about why having one system for everybody that's fair, it's defined benefits, is the right thing to do. No one can opt out. Everybody's in. Nobody's out. Both from the patient perspective, the physician perspective, and the institutional perspective. That's not to say that for, you know, certain types of things that are not part of a benefit plan, that people wouldn't need to get something else. But for a defined set of benefits, both the doctors, the institutions, as well as the patients would all be in. People are pretty happy with Medicare in this country. Not ideal, but we hear all the time, don't take my Medicare away. In fact, it's been in this current election a big issue of whether we keep Medicare as a single-payer type system or turn it into a voucher system. And I think the American people are profoundly and resoundingly against turning Medicare into a voucher system.
Who pays for all of this?
Well, we pay for it right now. The U.S. healthcare system is 2.5 times more expensive than the next in the world, at the expense of life expectancy. So we don't have the best outcomes in terms of life expectancy, and we pay a lot more for it. And it's not like emergency care, as at least one of the presidential candidates says, is the equivalent of taking care of people. Emergency care is emergency care. People need primary care. They need access to prevention and services. Right now, we all pay. So everyone in insurance in this country pays $1,000. Of their insurance premium goes to paying for uncompensated care elsewhere in the system. We pay way more than any other industrialized country, as I said, 2.5 times the closest one, and with much worse outcomes. In the United States, the death gap between the poorest community and the wealthiest community in the United States, the lowest life expectancy and the highest life expectancy community is 30 years. In Great Britain, for example, that gap is 13 years. Not all of this gap and inequality is going to be solved by health care. There's individual responsibility, et cetera, but much of it can be solved by a fair health care system.
You know, I know you're associated with Physicians for a National Health Program, and I'll be mentioning a little bit later that you're going to be in town this week and where you'll be appearing. It has been my impression, and perhaps I'm wrong, that the medical community, doctors, physicians, in general, are opposed to what's going on in Washington today with regard to the Affordable Care Act.
When you're a doctor facing a sick patient, there is not one thing you think about, and I would say this goes for most of the doctors, except taking care of that patient. I think what doctors want is a simple system without all the bureaucracy and just to be able to take care of patients simply. When it comes to actual single-payer type systems or improved Medicare for all, right now about 50% of the doctors in the country are in favor of some type of simplified system just because there's so much waste in the system. A recent study showed that a third of our excess costs in the system are due to excess administrative costs, and then another third are excess test ordering, which is probably being done for defensive or economic reasons. So, you know, there's a lot of waste in our system. The doctors know it. We just want to take care of patients.
So what's the objective then? Should the Affordable Care Act be deep-sixed and start all over again, or is it a platform upon which we can build towards something that you're proposing?
Yeah. Well, I wrote a book called County, called Life, Death, and Politics at Chicago's County Hospital, to sort of explain to the reader what it's like to work in these different communities. And in that book, I do talk about the Affordable Care Act about single payer. I call the Affordable Care Act the Affordable Care Act is to single payer what the Missouri Compromise was to the end of slavery. So if you remember, we thought we could get around the imperative to end slavery by saying the Missouri can have it, but we're not going to do it in Kansas. And in the end, we ended up having to end slavery in this country because it was a moral proposition. And I think what the Affordable Care Act is a step, but unfortunately it doesn't achieve the triple aim of what health care reform should do, better care for individuals, and it won't do that because of the differences in the cards, plus it'll leave large numbers of people uninsured at the end. It's not going to improve population health, and it's still going to be too costly. So I think, in the words of Winston Churchill, Americans always do the right thing after exhausting every possibility. And I think we're going to be forced, as 26 other countries have done, to come up with some kind of single-payer type system and improve Medicare for all, building on what we've learned out of Medicare and expanding it across the country. Now, while the Medicare system needs additional funding, that's because people are getting a lot more benefits out of it than being paid into it. But Medicare has 5,000 employees for 45 million recipients, and United Healthcare has 178,000 employees for 78 million recipients. That's a lot more administrative support that we're paying for with private insurance company types of products than one would get out of a simply administered single-payer type system. In the end, cost will drive this. In the end, it's immoral to have a separate and unequal health care system. It's one thing to have a difference between rich and poor in this country, but the idea that you will die and should die because you're poor and you don't have the right card is immoral, and I don't think Americans believe in that. And so I think we will eventually come to our senses and adopt an improved Medicare for all.
But, you know, it's one thing for the man and woman on the street to agree with everything you've said. Now you've got to get it past the politicians. And there seems to be no appetite in Washington these days, perhaps in the foreseeable future, for getting two sides together to work this thing out.
Yes, you're right. So why am I an optimist in the presence of all these facts, I think, is what you're asking me.
Sure.
Well, I've learned a lot from history and from my own experiences. You know, when we went as a young group of residents to the public hospital in Chicago, we didn't think that the place would stay open. But when we got together, not only did it stay open, we got a new hospital and it preserved the public system in Chicago. But I look back to, say, the suffragettes. You know, when Susan B. Anthony came outside one day and told the men, "Hey, guys, we want the right to vote." It took 60 or 70 years before she got it. And not only that, she was arrested in a number of elections for voting in federal elections, and now we have her on a coin. The fact is we have seen progress in the United States over time. We have a Constitution and a Declaration of Independence that are built on very worthy principles. And just sometimes it takes us a long time to get there. So, yes, there is a lot of conflict now. But in the end, if we really believe that health care is a human right and people have the right to have equal health care regardless of their means in the world, and we want to lower the costs, then there's only one way to go. And eventually, I believe we'll come to our senses. It may not be in the next couple of years, but increasingly people are speaking around the country about the importance of this. Obamacare, I don't agree with, but it is a step, and the next step will be to a fair health system, and we'll eventually get to it, but it's going to take persistence like anything else we've done in this country. It hasn't come because someone just said yes.
Perhaps
they generally say no, and we have to convince them.
Perhaps helped along by the fact, and our time is just getting away from us, that those parts of ACA which have already been implemented appear to be very popular. And so,
in Medicare, I will remind you, 1965, people thought Medicare was a communist plot. All the doctors were against it. It's one of the most successful programs in our country's history. You can't take it away from people. And you're right. There are going to be a lot of popular things in this act, and even better, in an improved Medicare for all.
Well, let me tell folks, Dr. Ansel, what you'll be up to. Doctor will be making two appearances in St. Louis tomorrow and Thursday for the St. Louis chapter of the Physicians for a National Health Program. He'll discuss medicine and the unfinished task of health reform at Congregation Share Emmeth tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, and what the lessons from Chicago's public hospital tell us about health care in the U.S. That's Thursday at Washington University's Brown Hall at 10 a.m. We have information about all of this on our website, stlpublicradio.org. Dr. David Ansel, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Enjoyed talking to you. And we want to let you know about what's happening tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air. As it happens, we'll be talking with Mary DeLock Leonard about her new book on the city of Clayton. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.